This week on The Droids, we're talking about the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, all of our thoughts on where it ended up, what we got. We'll have full breakdowns of each episode 5 and 6 coming up in a future episode. But today, we're talking about the conclusion, what our expectations and takeaways were from Obi-Wan Kenobi, the series. Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast, a rare Droids You're Looking For, with three of the four droids in person. The only one who's not here, sadly frozen in carbonite once again. Somehow he keeps on falling in that carbonite pit.
Yeah.
Our good friend Chris.
So Chris is gone from our hearts and our bodies. He's frozen in carbonite. We are here in an undisclosed location in the Atlantic. We're well tanned. We're well fed. The boys are feeling good. Chris, he's pale somewhere, I guess. And I don't know if he's eaten.
He's in that bar of carbonite getting chewed on by a rancor in some pit somewhere.
Oh, wait. Wait, that's him right here. Chris is here in person.
Hey, guys. Sorry I'm late. Addy?
Oh, Chris, that stinks that you have to go so soon.
Waka waka!
Well, at least he graced us with his presence.
Bye, Chris.
Well, we're excited to talk about Obi-Wan Kenobi, and we do want to do the full breakdowns of episode 5 and 6. Yep. We're a little bit just all over the place with all of us getting together, with the timing of trying to make this all happen, so I know some of you are out there asking, where are the episode 5 and 6 breakdowns? I know, Mom, yep. Eventually. I'm sorry, Mom.
Listen, the droids need some time off, too, to spend some time together. This may come as a surprise. This is a high priority in our life, but it's not the only priority in our life, the podcast.
It's also, you know, 2 years without traveling, without seeing one another, really, in any serious way. Like,
yeah, you know what is funny? I didn't see you guys at Chris's wedding.
Well,
we did avoid you. No, we did avoid. It's a weird time to bring it up, Mike, but we did avoid you at Chris's wedding, yes.
I thought it was weird that's the only other time I've ever heard Chris say waka waka was right before he said I do. Because I want the listeners to know, like, they might not have heard him say that on the pod before, but in case you were doubting that is, in fact, Chris. That is something that Chris is known to say in big and important moments in his life.
Is waka waka. And then he insists that he's the first one to pioneer the term. Yeah.
Well, let's get into these.
Chris. It's the Chris cast.
We always love the Chris cast. And honestly, more Chris cast. Let's just get more opportunities for it.
Yeah, that'll be an outpost.
So one thing, you know, as we just general takeaways. Let's say we've gotten to where we've ended up here with the Obi-Wan Kenobi finale, with the series coming to a close. We came into it with our own expectations. I think one thing that I just want to say in the outset is, like, there's been so much of a reassessment on what do you want out of these things? What do we want out of these things? What do people want out of these things? There's a lot of, you know, throughout the series, there was a lot of criticism of, like, oh, it's bad writing even when it wasn't bad writing. Yes, there are bad writing things within the show, but telling a story where you don't know everything about a character yet isn't bad writing. Mm-hmm. But there's been a lot of an assessment of, you know, people aren't necessarily ready for a story to play out. They just want to see what they want to see when they want to see it and get exactly what they expected. And there's a lot of demands of, like, show me what I wanted from this. Give me Anakin. Give me Obi-Wan together. I guess I'm my point in getting to all of this is it's made me reconsider how I watch these shows. Mm-hmm. And part of me wants to get to a point where maybe I do watch them without any expectation. If I could get myself to have that, the problem is when you bring in nostalgia characters, you bring in legacy characters, how can you not have an expectation with it? But I'm trying to be like, I wish I could go in and just be like, take it for what it is. Yes, I will still understandably critique the parts that don't work. I'm not trying to say give anything a full pass, but I want to start to maybe come in with less of my own baggage and watch what they create.
I wonder if it's so, Mike. You hit on a lot there, and I think that there's definitely an element when you're playing with legacy characters, when you're doing prequel series or in betweequel series and movies and everything. When you're doing squeakquels.
In betweequel. I like in betweequel.
I did not invent it just now. Either I invented it before, or I think I've encountered that. I don't think that's a me thing.
I think probably Peter Cerretta said it first.
But
Cerretta!
When you're playing with those characters, as a brand, as a studio, as producers, you're tapping into. You're saying we want to make something that we already know people want, which means people have expectations and want something out of it. The other thing that I'm kind of curious about is I think we are all fans of like the weekly rollout, and it lets you digest things and think about it and anticipate the next episode. But I do wonder if part of this is like the Netflix effect of the binge era of TV viewing.
Yeah.
That had this show all dropped 6 episodes day one, the qualms and criticisms about the writing might have been lessened because the people who are, making calls after they watch one episode and have a week to just think about predictions, they're getting those predictions answered 2 hours later when they get to it in the series. And so maybe it actually allows the work the writers did more room.
It's a really interesting point, and I'll let you continue on what you're talking about. Like, Netflix and the bingeification of Netflix began in what? 2008, 2010? Like,
a little later. I think probably 2011-ish.
Okay, so Orange is the New Black,
and then
House of Cards, and then Stranger Things was a couple years after
that. Yes, and don't forget Hemlock Grove,
Well, I won't forget Hemlock Grove. Right. But if you think about people who are right now 22 or 24, that's how they grew up watching television.
Right.
Not all of it. Not everything they had was the same way.
No, they were watching The Big Bang Theory, too.
But if anything, they're probably watching reruns of The Big Bang Theory on Netflix where they could watch it all at once.
Bazinga!
You've got a generation that's now coming of age when they're talking more prominently in like their forms of criticism in social media.
Right.
That at this point, I mean, they've had 10 years of this. They've had 10 years of watching things without week to week. So maybe those of us who grew up watching something week to week are more likely to accept it.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about this on an earlier episode a little bit about how like episodes don't really mean as much in television anymore.
Yeah.
Where there used to be, because of the bingeification, better shows tend to kind of take advantage of the form a little more, where it's like an episode within a bigger story. I think all of this is like a very roundabout way of saying that like we're slightly disappointed by the series.
Right? Yeah.
Because otherwise, why would we be analyzing this aspect of it?
Without a doubt.
We wouldn't be saying we need to adjust our expectations if all of our expectations were met.
Yeah.
But I think, and we've talked about this privately, certainly, and maybe on the pod about kind of how there is a little bit of this thing that happens now because audiences have been given so much literally directly what they're asking for. Like, I think the Marvelification, where it's just like a dopamine rush of seeing exactly what you were hoping to see, like literally exactly that. I think that a lot of creative teams or studios are using that formula, and I think it's going to get old quick because everybody having dessert all the time isn't good for everybody. But
you're right. I don't know how old it will get quickly.
Maybe
unfortunately,
not.
Because we've seen. There is only the bankable IP right now. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that anybody's making is the bankable IP.
Yeah, maybe it's just getting old for me then. That's fine. And and there comes a point where everything, it's like everything's not made for me. The Marvel movies, I'm a grown person. I'm not their prime demographic. You know what I mean?
You are though. You're still in prime spending years. So if you're thinking about
54-year-old man, you think so? Because
they are trying to be like, if anything, Marvel and now Star Wars as well, the idea of the four-quadrant storytelling, four-quadrant film, where it's like every single one, which is why I think Star Wars has some of the formula that it does, because it's about how can we make this okay for kids? How can we make this interesting for the nostalgia-led? How can we make it okay for the teens? And like having something for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, because the making it interesting for the nostalgia led is the least interested I am in what they're doing, because the nostalgia is there.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's like,
well, just by doing it.
Yeah, just by doing it. But but beyond that, they're like really like putting a hat on top of a hat a little bit. And you know, with this series, there is a lot of expectation, specifically because of the characters, specifically because it was like the first question everyone asked when they said that they were doing side stories, which is like, will they get Ewan McGregor to do an Obi-Wan?
Yeah.
So it's like, maybe it's a little unfair to the show to expect that. I think that even those things considered, that the execution of the show wasn't always, you know, at the epitome of what I would hope storytelling in Star Wars would be. Yeah, I'm still kind of digesting it. There's a lot of stuff I really liked about it, and Ewan McGregor carries a lot of stuff, but there's also things that were in it that we'll get more deeply into as we go through the last two episodes with the full cast here. But, you know, we were talking about, there's stuff that I feel like were retreads of things that they had done on Rebels mm-hmm. that were better.
Mm-hmm.
There's stuff that
I will say I don't mind that much in the respect, and I know we would get into that later,
yeah.
but in the respect of the broadest audience, the most people are going to see that kind of thing is in this versus in Rebels. And so it's kind of like when you take something from Marvel that really worked and you put it on the biggest stage, it's like, oh, get this to more people. Get this to more people who are going to be excited about it. I like that.
You couldn't even look at it like it's like someone with Marvel, it would be like, they did it in the comic books and now they did it in the movie.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So there is kind of, maybe not a one-to-one, but like a close analogy there. But yeah, I think that this series, I know it wasn't what I was hoping it would be in terms of the emotional impact it would have on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for a lot of people, a lot of things were, you know, seeing Anakin and Obi-Wan together was like, and that was emotional. But I guess it didn't have like the gut punch I thought it would.
It's like almost, again, to me, and I think we've joked about this, it's the DiCaprio pointing at the screen in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where it's like, you're just showing me that thing and I'm emotional because of that. I want to know what's emotional about it in the story they're trying to tell. And we're giving the visuals.
So there's like a cathartic apology that Obi-Wan gives to Anakin that I thought was the most emotional aspect of the entire show.
Yeah.
And it's because it was like a new emotion that we're seeing from him concerning a situation we're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that there are times where this isn't a knock on Hayden Christensen's age. I'm not going to make fun of another thing. They have that scene between him and Hayden Christensen where Hayden Christensen is supposed to be like 17 years old. And it's like, he is so clearly not a 17 year old. They're both the age that they are in life. And maybe they did like some CGI work, but he just doesn't look like a young man. And to me, that's kind of like the epitome. It's like they will just like force this if they need to like make it the quote unquote nostalgia trip.
Mm-hmm.
And people will like say things like, they look exactly the same as these in the movie. And it's like, don't be delusional.
I mean, like, look at the wig.
Yeah. Like, it's just like, but that to me is like an epitome of like, instead of working with what they had, which is like, Hayden's older, Ewan's older. Like, that's cool that we got them both. We could still use like interesting things that, instead, they're like, no, we're going to like force it that we have a scene of them from the age of a movie that came out 20 years ago. And like everyone needs to, like everyone's going to get very excited that they're seeing something from it. But it's like literally like watching people play dress up a little bit, which I know is what acting is. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just like a little bit, I think it's a little cheap.
Yeah, I didn't mind it terribly in that respect, but I mostly because I like the story they were trying to tell in episode 5 about using that and his still penchant for aggressiveness, for impatience, and how that led to him, how Obi-Wan could escape and make the right decision. I thought in episode 5, it had more of a point they were trying to make than a lot of the other episodes, at least a point about their relationship. And even in the finale, they didn't necessarily have that.
Imagine they had gone mixed media and done like the flashbacks for the animated version.
God, that would have been crazy.
That would have been cool.
I mean, but that's the thing, though. Back to expectations. I had talked about how I wanted to see flashbacks to the Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
that was fine. I honestly kind of wanted to see more about like the character study that we've talked about rather than just flashbacks to him and Anakin and just seeing Obi-Wan continue to think about all the things in his life that he had failed about. But, you know, we didn't necessarily need all of that. I guess that goes back to me. If I'm sitting there and my expectation is Clone Wars has to be a part of this. Better have Clone Wars. There's like references to that. Mm-hmm. Then what am I setting myself up for in that respect? And I need to not think that way. I don't want to experience shows in that manner.
Yeah.
I guess for me, there's something that comes down to like just the fundamental, like when we talk about what you opened with, like what is it you want out of a show? What is it you want out of the thing you're consuming? And it's tricky because I certainly am someone who it's like, and you know, any of you guys know that I go back to the well of things I like over and over again. I'm a movie rewatcher, often over the choice of like watching a new movie. Mm. But one of the things that I guess I want out of anything I'm watching is I want the choice to watch that thing to be because that thing is different or like unique in some way. And I think like what happened, there was an interesting opportunity here because there is this big gap in Obi-Wan Kenobi's life that has not been explored and certainly has not been shown in live action. And you have the actor to do it, and you have the time passage for everyone to be the right age. But I think, and this gets down the middle with expectation, I didn't care so much whether the show was like a deeply pensive, you know, existential exploration of one human's journey alone in the desert, or whether it was an action, you know, monster of the week, you know, desert samurai movie, you know. But I think what I did expect was I naively looked at it and I said, well, we have the full arc of like the big things in Obi-Wan's life. We know that it was like the prequel trilogy covered him as a young Padawan to a master Jedi and his greatest failure. We have the end of his life, you know, kind of across the original trilogy, but really in A New Hope, episode 4, some people call it Star Wars. And so I expected that whatever adventure, whatever story was told to us would be new and different. And it, I think, you know, Ryan, I'm kind of coming around to something, to agreeing with something you said that I didn't immediately agree with at first, which is that like, I'm so glad they brought Hayden Christensen back, but like, I don't think it was a good idea. I don't think it was good for the series. I think that continuing to like deal with the characters we already know, it just all starts to put so neat of a bow on it, on this man's life, that it's like, okay, so he's literally been like tied in with the Skywalker family. Like every interesting moment of Obi-Wan Kenobi's life was directly tied to this thing.
Yeah.
Which then like,
I see what you're saying. Like, this could have been a story to separate from that.
I think this would have been a great series if the only character that we knew was Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. And everyone else is new and weird, and they do something that, like, I think there's obviously, you know, if you're Disney, you're going, well, there's more risk there because we don't know if people will like it and everything. But
you could carry it in one. Like, people will watch Obi-Wan even if Dave Vader wasn't there.
Yeah, I think they...
Of course. Before they announced Hayden Christensen was coming back, everybody was stoked.
But like, honestly, you're talking about Hayden. The bigger thing is about Vader. It's about bringing Vader back. It's not about Hayden. It's about bringing
that
character.
Which immediately is like, this is what the show needs to be about.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't have Vader kind of moving around.
No.
And, you know, we keep talking about this. Was it the Vanity Fair article? Was that what it was? We keep talking about how, like, in the Vanity Fair article, they were like, we're moving away from the Skywalker saga. And then they put every Skywalker that we've ever met in this show.
Pretty much, yeah.
Aside from Shmi.
Well, Rey's a Skywalker.
Right.
Where's Rey? Technically,
I'm Rey. Rey Skywalker.
Well,
she's a Skywalker.
Right. Yeah. Well, okay. So Kylo is technically related to them. Rey is an adopted Skywalker, and then
and we now know how Ben got his name because of this series.
Right. And then Shmi. So okay. So a lot of Skywalkers are in this show, and they're clearly not moving away from the Skywalker saga. Perhaps Obi-Wan Kenobi would not be the place for them to do that because they know that he was so intertwined with the Skywalkers. However, it simply comes across as like profoundly unimaginative that it's like, well, of course we're going to have the twins in here if we're going to have Vader in here, and like the fact that they need to have Vader at all, even though I understand that the opportunity was there. So it's like, if the opportunity is there, of course we need to do it. They were thinking so long about if they could, they didn't stop to think about whether they should.
It's tailored for YouTube reaction videos. In the trailer, in the show, so that you can be I know what that is, I recognize what that is,
right.
I can be like, oh!
Yeah, exactly, and it's very funny, because when the prequels came out, and people love to talk about this, even people who have come around on the prequels, unlike me, who was always with them, which is, I was paving, but people love to talk about how it took a while for people to warm up to the prequels, right? And it's implying that they know that there's this, like, long... like, these stories will be around for a long time, you know? Like, we gotta give them time to settle. And it's like, that is true, and it's like, you know, perhaps these things will seem brilliant. But I have to wonder that when you're not taking risks, you're only reflecting on the past, or, like, giving mirages of the past. When all of these things are viewed, like... in bulk, it won't be like where we had the prequels where like, wow, like, you know what, these things came out that were so radically different, like, that's cool, and they let us, it's going to be like, so like, there was these few years where everything came out and was exactly the same, huh? Mm-hmm. Like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, beyond the fact that he needed to deal with the twins and stuff like that, it's like he's literally doing, like, taking care of a young version of a legacy character the same way the Mandalorian is dealing with, like, a young version of a legacy character. And it's like, don't fool yourself. The Mandalorian started as, like, a Boba Fett idea.
Yeah.
So it's like, I know that Din Djarin is, like, a different character, but it's like, it looks exactly the same, which is Obi-Wan is now taking care of a little Leia. And that was fine. It was fine.
Yeah.
But it didn't need to be so tied in. Listen, I understand. If everything I did in life, I had, like, a magic button that I could, like, parachute myself out of it by being like, but, like, Luke's here, you know, or, like, Leia's here, then, like, it would be tempting, you know, to be like, listen, we don't have to worry about taking a risk on this story, because at the end, they're going to see, like, a Luke Skywalker, and, like, that'll, like, hit them where, like, in the heartstrings, and we'll get, you know, unnamed YouTube guy. Crying about it or whatever. And if that's the reaction people have, then, like, good for them. I'm glad for them that they're having that reaction. But it is the thing that is keeping this from moving forward, that people are just obsessed with literally just seeing people they know.
Yeah.
I see Sam here has his hand raised. Samuel?
Ooh, me. Thanks. No, I was just going to say, like, we were talking earlier about the Dune and the, you know, recent movie, but the book series, and how Frank Herbert, like, one of the later sequels of Dune, I don't know if it's like book 3 or book 4, just like, it just takes place 5,000 years or something or 50,000 years in the future. It's, you know, because he's dealing with things in, you know, in his novels that are so, so far in the future, tens of thousands of years, that it's like he kind of was unafraid, and I'm not saying that those books are, like, all lauded as being as good as the original, but he was unafraid to just advance the story and follow it to a new logical conclusion. It makes me think of the podcast where, I forget her name, the editor from Breaking Bad, you know, did, like, Talking Bad or whatever with Vince Gilligan, and, you know, usually it was her, Vince, and then one of the other, you know, writers or performers or someone, and they would talk through, like, oh, with every episode and every season, we tried to write ourselves into a corner and give ourselves the challenge that we then had to write out of, right? Yeah. That we had to find the, like, what happens next. And by challenging themselves in that way, it kind of forced everyone to perform at their apex, right, when they're writing, and like really find like what is the best possible story, and at some point that story has to end. I think, like, I guess what I'm missing from Star Wars right now is something new. Everything looks like it's riffing on the original trilogy aesthetic. Everything is dealing with characters that we've already met or that are iconographically the same as characters we've already met. I want somebody to introduce a new... And it's what they did to some extent with the sequel trilogy, at least as I interpreted it as intended, which was that the sequel trilogy was to be these new characters carrying the torch forward with appearances of legacy mm-hmm. characters to make us mm-hmm. kind of connected mm-hmm. and feel good. Mm-hmm. And instead, you know, by the end of that, we're entirely navel-gazing, you know, and looking backwards at these legacy characters. It's what's kind of happening on all these TV series. I think Filoni might be able to do it. I think he's moving it. It's moving forward in Ahsoka's life. It's moving, you know,
theoretically, meaning right. like Ahsoka, when that takes place, could still have her cross paths with Luke, because she could be like they've done that already. And I'm talking about the timeline of that series is not going to pick up right at the end of Rebels. So the search for Ezra Bridger could be 10 years on or 15 years on and take place after Return of the Jedi and have another time where Luke is involved and they de-age him again. And
right. Just I'm assuming introduce... it's picking up after The Mandalorian Season 2.
You would have to think so. So
I think, yeah, it so... seemed like they were... Because in Season 2, she asked where Grand Admiral Thrawn was and then... Boba Fett, she was in that one episode which takes place
It would be very weird for them to be like, yeah, we're gonna go back like 5 years.
So my hope is that she's already had her run-in with Luke and like that
you hope so,
that
but
part of the recipe is done.
But you have to think they're still trying to hit that recipe. But before I forget,
they
I do want to say
that guy, they're gonna keep using him.
Do you really have a podcast if it's not talking without a G on the end of it? Like, That's really what a podcast is. It's got to be talking without a G. And this is our formal announcement. We are now talking Star Wars. I hope everybody's...
I hope it's not taken.
I think we should look it up. If it's not taken, we should think about it, because we probably will do a little better.
Well, if it's not taken... If it is taken, we should do Taken. Talking Taken.
Talking Taken.
Yeah, to talk about the three Taken films.
Speaking of Taken, how about that cameo?
How about it, though?
Well, so let's... I want to get back...
I'll give it to Sam, because he loves that hair.
We're going to go into
episode
5 and 6 and the individual episodes that we're going to do about them. I do want to say, and Sam, you could take this right off the top if you want to. I want to just ask what worked about this series for you. And I would say it is, knowing we're going to get very in-depth with everything, just like tell me one or two things that really worked for you about this series. And Sam, if it is that cameo, I want to let you go first. If it isn't, I got something else, but.
Well, you should go, because I'll have something else. I'll just say it's not the cameo that worked for me. This was not the cameo I was looking for.
I would say to me what worked in this was the women. The women in this show. I personally loved Reva. I thought she was a fantastic villain. I did think they muddled. I didn't like the ending of what they did with her going after Luke. Most of her time being spent trying to just get back at Anakin and trying to take down Vader. That was great. That was really cool. Really interesting thing. She was probably something I enjoyed more about the series than even the main plot line. Mm-hmm. And I love the idea of a Padawan who saw everything and then how she, you know, what we learned where some people had no patience. How could she possibly know that Vader was Anakin? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they're going to tell you. Or you can also just make a pretty easy assumption about where this is going. Played very well, I think, throughout by Moses Ingram. Yeah. She was very threatening, imposing. I loved Little Leia, the actress. She was great. Again, the usage and that kind of thing, maybe a little bit different to me. Tala, that actress, Indira, I think is her first name. She was really great. And even in the moments where she was trying to get, you know, Obi-Wan to think about, like, here's how you don't forget but still move on, was really well done. Her death, not maybe as much, but the line reading of May the Force be with you, like, she is a fantastic actress. Mm-hmm. And that was really wonderful. And then even throw in Leia's mom. Mm-hmm. Like, all of these female characters really worked for me, and I wanted a little bit more of them. And if they give us a Reva series, I'll be excited about a Reva series. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that worked for me. There are more, but I just...
If I'm going to... The top thing that I'll say worked for me was the exploration of and depiction of Obi-Wan's journey back to the Force. I felt that I really acutely felt his abandonment of the Force in episodes 1 and 2.
That was cool.
And I think that it... In episode 2, when he reconnects to the Force and he has this really kind of emotional reaction to that feeling and that reconnection when he saves Leia, they don't end it there. With each progressive episode, he becomes stronger. He becomes more attuned to the life all around him and everything. And I thought that I think that's like kind of a favorite thing for all of us on the pod is when Star Wars gets, you know, weird and nerdy about the Force itself and finds new ways to kind of communicate this like amorphous, unreal thing. So that worked for me quite a bit.
I agree with you. He's as wise as Master Yoda and as powerful as Master Windu. So we got to see that, which was cool. And it had precedent beyond something that was... I'm not dismissing the novels, but beyond that, everybody heard that Luke Skywalker was the most powerful Jedi who has ever lived and will ever live and is the most powerful in the world. And my dad could beat him up. But
I mean, really, you know what? It's still... They haven't done him justice by not letting him pull down a ship yet.
Exactly.
Everybody else has pulled down a ship.
Yeah, did you see him let Darth Vader pull down a ship?
They didn't let Luke do it.
Luke didn't do it.
I mean...
Anyway.
He is my dad.
So things that the only person could beat up... Luke Skywalker, my dad.
Luke Skywalker, my dad.
So the things that worked about it, of course, I think Ewan really did great. You know, not surprised.
There were times where he was given dialogue that I was like, what are you doing to my poor Ewan here?
There was parts where he was really working.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was he was working for his lunch. And so yeah, I agree with you. I think the Reva stuff was great. I think that it would have been equally, if not more compelling, if we're talking about a world where I don't think Vader needed to be in the show.
Yeah.
Because I really did like the Inquisitor stuff. Yep, I like that aspect of the Star Wars universe, especially in this part of the timeline.
Yep.
And having a super ambitious Inquisitor who really wants to get Obi-Wan for advance because they want to advance, who is also a youngling and a victim of Order 66 mm-hmm. is compelling mm-hmm. as the thing that is like him witnessing what his failure led to. It's carrying the weight. You don't need both of them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that like that would have been a new character who was compelling and he has to deal with, you know,
I mean, her asking him about where were you?
Yeah.
Why didn't you save us?
Yes.
I mean,
great
like,
stuff. Great stuff.
I wanted so much of that.
You could put Hayden. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the visions. I'm not trying to give Hayden less to do. Like, I like Hayden Christensen. Mm-hmm. The visions that he was having of Hayden, like, things like that. I think all of that worked fine. Yeah. I generally don't think that the Darth Vader stuff worked, but I think it took away from the Obi-Wan stuff and a show called Obi-Wan.
You know what would have been rad? Just, like, let me rewrite the show and like, punch it up, which is so dumb to do and such a wasted effort. But I just thought, how cool would it have been if the inclusion of Hayden Christensen was like, what if they did something totally new with Star Wars where it's like Ewan McGregor throughout, Obi-Wan throughout, is communing with the Force ghost of Anakin, who is killed by Darth Vader.
Mm. And
so he's already a Force ghost. Yeah. Like, what if they did something like that, the separation of spirit from body, and that's the goodness lives on.
Could have been cool. They'd have to explain how he comes back together in the end.
Of course. And it would have been problematic and people might have hated it. But that's the kind of thing that... you said that and I'm like, mm-hmm. there's a risk.
Yeah.
And
you know, they talk about Force ghosts. I've never seen someone be Force haunted. You know what I mean? So that's something.
I mean, technically we did in Duel of the Fates, the unproduced script from Colin Trevorrow.
That's true. We did.
Because Luke is haunting Ben through That's the true. Force.
So the Inquisitor really stuff I really liked. I liked...
Ryan's like, I'm going to talk about that.
No. It's just... It's true. But the Inquisitor stuff, and I thought Reva was great. And I think that, in fact, connecting her to Vader was taking away from... Her character was almost more interesting without it.
Mm, fair. Yeah. Just the idea of her again... Feeling that anger towards Obi-Wan, which is why we talked about
towards episode, the Jedi. It justifies why she wants to be an Inquisitor. Yeah. And she's just really
like
ambitious.
Episode 4, where she yells at Tala first before instead of yelling at Obi-Wan. When I call him, like, that feels so weird because it seems like she'd just be mad at the Jedi.
Yeah, no, it's a perfectly like that is a good motivation to have someone become an Inquisitor.
Yep,
like that's compelling
and a good reason again to come back to the light. Yeah, but she still has that. She can't go full. She thinks she can,
right?
And she has so much anger about it. But.
So that's the arc of your show.
Yeah.
You know, and other things. I thought though I didn't like the choice to have the young kids really involved, like the young Luke and Leia involved. Mm-hmm. I thought the little girl who played Leia was very good.
That's what I mean.
So it's one of those things where it's like, I don't think that we needed that part of the story, but that's just what it was. And I thought Joel Edgerton, I'm glad that he got more to do in the last episode, and I thought he... brought a lot of emotional gravitas.
It was nice that he came back. I was a little worried that he was done and it was just that one scene at the beginning, and I was glad that he was back in it.
Again, and you guys all looked at me like I was crazy, but when episode 3 came out, they cast an actor who ended up being a great actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, exactly.
Not episode 3 of Obi-Wan.
Part 3 of this. There's a lot more, I'm sure, that we would all say worked for us. We can go into a bunch of that as we go into our episode 5 and 6. You know, Gonk Droid doing the clock in, clock out, I'll always love, and I really want that in any workplace going forward.
Sure.
But let's talk about one major thing that didn't work. And again, I think there could be a lot within this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of difficult to even peg it down to one thing because we've talked about at the beginning of this episode, the expectations and everything that came with it. But I guess, like, just trying to focus on one thing that really didn't work for you. You know, and I'm almost at a loss myself because I'm thinking, like, there's so many different things. How do I focus on one at the moment? That being said, yeah, come back to me.
Well, again, I don't want to take it. I think that the inclusion of focusing on the twins threw the whole thing off.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was completely mishandled.
Like, they could have been there, as in Obi-Wan's still here, Luke is there, but it's not the crux of the whole show.
Yeah, it was the crux of the whole show, but then also, strangely, when they got to the emotional payoff, not quite the crux of the whole show, because it seemed like they were setting it up that their presence would have an impact, like it would all intersect, that it was like their presence would have an impact on his interaction with Vader at the end, because it's still unclear whether Vader even knows that the kids exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, okay, maybe this will all intersect in an exciting way. And then it simply didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I thought that his moment with her was nice at the end, where he was like talking about the traits she gets from her parents and stuff like that. In a Star Wars way, you know, like, I'm not sure I like agree that that's how people get traits like that, but I thought it was like a nice moment.
Yeah, it was one of those moments that I was like, okay, I feel the fuzzies.
Right.
Watching this.
But beyond, like, it, you know.
Yeah.
It didn't mess me up the way the end of the Clone Wars did or anything. So, yeah, but I'd say the way the twins were handled was, I just didn't understand why they decided that that was the thing.
For me, the fundamental thing that did not work about this was that there was a 6-episode series. This should have been a movie. This could have been a movie.
I think it was supposed to be a movie.
I think that, you know, if there's any editors, if anyone knows,
you think Topher Grace will do it?
Any editor, I do think Topher Grace probably has already started. I think if you're going to insist on it being a series, first of all, I mean, it's like, make it a movie, make it a Disney Plus exclusive movie if you don't want to put the budget and the full weight behind it. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to put the budget that I'm sure went into this production,
was it like $20 million
series,
an episode?
I don't even know.
But whatever,
what? Really,
that can't have been.
No, Stranger Things is the one that was $20 million an episode.
What?
But I guess my point is, like, this felt like a, you know, 90-minute to 2-hour and 20-minute story squeezed into a 6-episode, you know, whatever, 4.5-5-hour thing. And there was just, there were just long sections where there was the dialogue that you'd cut from the first draft, the dialogue that would be there that, you know, is explaining and setting things up that you go, yeah, we found it. It's implied by mm-hmm. what happens next. It's the audience gets it because of where it goes next.
Episode 4 was almost a rough draft of episode 5.
There were so many episodes where it was like there was a lot of filler, a lot of downtime. I mean, I think we've kind of already talked about it, and I do also agree with both you guys that it's like I also kind of think that just fundamentally, like, a different story would have served the character better.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm gonna attempt, you know, as fairly as I can, and you know, to view it on its own terms and say, well, this is the story they presented. This is the story they're telling me happened. And if that's the case, I don't think it's a 6-episode season of television.
I think if the finale, I think if the story they told had a little bit more advancing the ball or showing more about us, making us actually learn something new about the relationship between Anakin and Obi-Wan, or learn more about Obi-Wan in general, it's easier to like look past all that. Like, because the way it finished, we've basically ended up exactly where we were at the start. I think it's a lot easier to be like, yeah, there was a lot of stuff that was just wasted that was dropped in there.
But this also isn't the period of the story that I'm interested in learning more about the relationship of Obi-Wan and Anakin.
Yeah, no, we've had enough of that.
Well, but also, I mean, like, the Clone Wars is the period when you want that, and they did what they did in the movies. They did a lot more in the Clone Wars TV series. If you want to explore that aspect, it's got to be when they're young men and when they're forging that bond. It's like not now. Like, this was essentially, I mean, look, this
it was a postscript to a story that already ended.
They've retconned this in, right? Yeah. Like, when, you know, when George created Star Wars, some people call it A New Hope, when he created that, even if he did have a 6-episode story mapped out, which was, I think, the claim, and there's a lot of dispute if he had the full arc kind of mapped in his head of the 6 episodes, I think that this period of Obi-Wan's life is meant to be when he and Anakin are incommunicado, and they're not in, you know, like, they're both isolated from one another. So if you're gonna add this in, it's just like, yeah, there's not enough to change there.
Mm-hmm. The weight of that reconnect at the beginning of A New Hope is more powerful when it has been 30 years or 25 years or whatever since they've last seen each other.
Absolutely.
Also, like, the apology I thought was cathartic, mostly because Ewan McGregor plays it very well. So it's like, there's that, but it's really just a expansion on a conversation and interaction that they already had.
Yep.
Which is like, he says, like, then my friend is truly dead. Yeah, and it's like, then you are truly lost.
We just repeated the things that we've done.
Yeah.
Before.
Like on Mustafar, where it's like, I just learned you were alive. And so, like, so it's like, he just kind of acted it well again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's fine. And that's an emotional thing for them to be dealing with, but he could have been dealing with that without literal physical confrontations with Vader.
Exactly.
And again, Vader, they keep giving, and this is where I was talking about how it's like a retread of a thing done in Rebels, better in Rebels. They keep giving this idea that Vader, you know, that these characters and it makes us through the characters feel like maybe like they'll get through to him. Like maybe they'll, like, you know, the humanity's there. And then they keep, they keep having the devastating realization that the humanity is not there. Now, that kind of needs to be what happens, because he can't find his humanity before episode four. Because then what do you do with that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless they were going to do a Darth Vader show where he's nice for a few years and then ends up being mean again. But like, it is this thing where it's like, this guy's like pure dag nasty evil, like that kind of thing. And so it creates a frustrating cycle to see the characters in, because you know that they're stuck on a narrative treadmill where they can't go anywhere with it.
Yep.
They can't. All they can do is reaffirm the relationship that was already there and that must remain before episode four. And so it's like, so you need to build new relationships for him between these times.
Yeah.
What does someone do for 20 years when they're all alone?
Well, and that's if you didn't set it up the way that they did, they could have explored a lot of different things with him. And we could have learned more about who he is. And we could have learned more about the story of Obi-Wan, which is what, to me, is the biggest thing that didn't work is, honestly, he's no different. Nothing changed about Obi-Wan's character.
Honestly,
he's not even the forefront, really, of the story in his own series.
No. And it would that would be okay if what was surrounding him was really interesting. But it's not. One of the more like interesting exchanges is that Leia says, like, what are you going to do now? And he goes, like, I don't know. Like, what do you think I should do? He seems, like, genuinely, like, I don't know what to do with myself.
Right? Yet he still has his primary mission that he had at the beginning of the series that hasn't changed at all.
Right. But it gives this idea of, like, Obi-Wan being, like, I need to be more than this mission. I'm giving too much credence to this line.
Yeah.
It has more to do with the fact that Ewan McGregor delivered it really well.
Yeah.
But it is this kind of thing of, like, at the end of this show, he makes some decision.
Mm-hmm.
But his decision is to do the same thing he was doing on the other side of that canyon.
Yeah.
Really nothing else. Unless, of course, they're queuing it up for season two, which will inevitably happen. And
but
then,
if you do the season,
then what do you do?
You do the season two and he's just, what, learning how to become a Force ghost with Liam Neeson? And is Liam back for six episodes? Hey.
Oh, that's, what took you so long, Obi-Wan? We're right over here where my eye line should be.
I will add one thing that is a minor thing that didn't work for me, but continues along the same theme of what we've been talking about. Dropping in the lines that we know, as in, like, you know, I will do what I must, and even hello there. It's my comparison that I would make to it, and I don't know that I almost would give better comparisons to Marvel this frequently, but it's the comparison of saying, I can do this all day for Captain America in the Winter Soldier. When that is used, there's purpose, there's context, there's different meaning. When it's used in this, well,
how do you do that with a hello there?
Well, you can't do it with a hello there, but they have, what, four or five different occasions in this series where they're just repeating lines to give us the knowing wink that you're hearing it again. Like, if you say, I will do what I must, what's the purpose of that other than just have us all be like, you said that before? Like, there wasn't any purpose to that.
Right. We're handing back a microphone. I could do this all day is useful because Steve Rogers says it when he's little Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
And so when he says it when he's older Steve Rogers, it either means that he's overpowering someone or that we're seeing that big, strong Steve Rogers is overpowered.
Yeah.
Right? Like you said, it has a contextual thing. Hello there doesn't have that.
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio point. No.
But hello there not just being
I will do what I must. It's like, I mean, when does he say that originally?
Revenge of the Sith. In literally the same fight scene.
So it's like, all right, you know, like, cool.
but even things where they have the character say things along the lines of, you know, either way this ends today. When in a show that is about something that will literally not end.
Yeah, we were talking about that when we were watching it. Like, it does make sense for the character to think that.
Yeah.
Right? But it doesn't do any favors when we, the audience, and the storytellers know that is not the case. Like, why would you add that in? In a world where this is all created, why would you add in a line that, like, we know is false?
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't feel like it's this thing so that we're like, oh, he thinks it's over. Like, because it's, like, over for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was odd.
All right, well, let's wrap this up with what was your favorite episode of the series?
I suppose the last one.
Was it?
Yeah, I'd say so. Well, either the last one or the first one.
Yeah. Mine's the first one.
I honestly thought that the Owen Beru stuff in the last one, if like this is what we're
even
doing.
Even his comical with them kicking over
barrels. I don't know. I guess I didn't know this about myself. I guess I'm a really big Joel Edgerton fan. I thought he brought a lot of pathos to the whole thing.
Edgerton's great. I agree with that. I do think the strongest, And do you think the strongest individual scenes in the entire series were the ones between Ewan McGregor and Joel Edgerton? I think like it's like, oh, so when you have the two best Ewan and Indira, the actress who played Tala, like those were really strong as
really
well.
Really good.
So it's like
she gave a lot of like she had a lot of work to do and a lot of world building in a sense, like continued world building of like what the path is, of what everyone's been going through. Like she did a lot of heavy lifting.
I'm going to call out as my favorite. I'm going to say episode 3 was my favorite. And I'm torn between that and the first episode. And I think it's because at the first of all, I thought the first half of the episode was like really funny and I really liked it. And I missed that throughout the rest of the series. Episode 3 is the one where they're episode 3. I've got this right. The part 3 where they're in the Zach Braff. That bit.
Yes.
That episode I really liked. It introduces Tala. It introduces the path. It's played really fun. It's also kind of the last point for me where the series was arcing upwards. Yeah. I kind of struggled with each successive episode after that to kind of reconcile the fact that it wasn't quite what I'd hoped it would be in terms of like kind of quality and enjoyment. It also wasn't what I hoped in terms of story, but like that's a useless, you know, that's Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill.
Well, that's why we talked about expectations at the start of this.
But that episode I thought was really fun. It balanced it. I agree completely that like the location of the confrontation with Vader in that episode is like a little bit weak, Mike, as you highlighted.
It was still the new greatest Lego set that anyone's ever
seen. But it had that face to face, and Obi-Wan wasn't who he once was, and it like put him on the kind of losing side of that face off in an interesting way. I'll set that as my high watermark.
I'm excited for our conversation about episode 5 because I do think episode 5, like I thought 4, I enjoy episode 5.
I'm giving the thumbs down.
I'm gonna be the only one maybe on the pod who did, but I really enjoy it and I enjoy what they were trying to do because it. Well, we can get into it all in that episode. My favorite is episode 1. Joel Edgerton and that scene between the two of them and like you trained his father and just all that being interrogated by Reva. I still feel the discomfort thinking about Reva interrogating Owen and thinking about him, you know, and then you know what the payoff at the end of how much he loves Luke and even having that come through, how much will I look at that character a little bit differently? That's something that most of this series and most of these streaming series on Disney Plus, they haven't done any of that yet. Made me actually feel differently about a character. Now it's easier to do that about a minor character, but I'm actually gonna be like, man, Owen wasn't just a hard ass. He actually did kind of love him. And then what was their final moments like when the stormtroopers came to kill them? They probably fought back a whole lot more than I ever thought they would because of this.
Much more sad about Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru being turned into skeletons.
Yeah.
You probably, what it sounds to me like you're saying, Mike, is that you want a Yellowstone set on a moisture farm.
Please. Right? Is Sheridan available to write that?
Taylor Sheridan, new Disney Plus series, Milking Stone.
Milking to Moof. No, just episode 1 in general. Like, I love the call to adventure. I love the end of that episode where he does make the decision to go. I really enjoy the Inquisitor, the Grand Inquisitor at the beginning, like talking at the cantina. Mm-hmm. And clearly the hope of what we thought the series could be. Yeah. Like it just really set it up for, wow, there's so much that we could explore here and so much potential. I mean, less so that it was going to be going to the Leia side of it, even though I do think that what could have been an absolute disaster wasn't the best thing for the series, but wasn't disastrous in the casting of the actress. She was good. Most of her involvement was fine. Like I think overall that ended up being okay rather than a massive misstep. The misstep was to continue to have most stories be just about like, hey, we're going to have the older one and the kid and we're going to have everybody feel good.
Five people.
Yeah. Episode 1 would have been tops for me and I'd gladly go back and revisit that often. I think that's pretty much going to do it for this edition of the pod. We're going to be back with episode 5, 6. We're going to get Chris out of that air duct. He's still trying to open up a gate for us. And Chris, we're hanging in there for you, buddy.
Come out to the party, have a few laughs.
Wow, all right.
Bye, Chris.
No, he left earlier.
Chris did a great.
He did. He did. He well, earlier. Chris, we miss you, and we can't wait to do the pod again with you, sir. And we will call it there. I guess, you know, more to come soon, episode 5 and episode 6. We're 66 days as we record this from Andor. Does the ending of Obi-Wan lead to more or less excitement for Andor?
So...
Ryan's face is just like...
For me, I guess a little bit less, which probably bodes well for the series because it, you know, you're always going to clear a lower bar.
I'll quote Roger Ebert's review of one of the Indiana Jones sequels where he said, if you asked me which... If I had 4 pounds of sausage and you asked me which one tasted best, I'd say the first because I was hungry. And the last would seem the least because I was the least hungry. So this is just kind of like someone saying, like, do you want more sausage? And it's like, sure.
So you're not full yet.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll always...
You'll always have an appetite for Star Wars, but you're
not necessarily... Yeah, if a Star Wars show comes out, it's an hour a week that, you know, I could watch a Star Wars show. So sure. Like, and we'll talk about it. And I'm hoping that it's good. And maybe it'll be very exciting. And I like that character a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that this is strange. As much as I don't think that Tony Gilroy seems like a pleasant person, based on interviews and stuff, he also is a person who is not precious about Star Wars, so maybe that'll lead to somebody doing anything different.
Yeah.
So
I wish that we didn't have another character whose fate was already decided. I'd like to watch a show where I don't know what's going to happen to people.
Yeah, but I hope that they feel a little bit more freedom to play around with that character and do interesting things because...
Well, they should be surrounded by basically everyone else could die at any minute.
Yeah, and also, like, they could do more with that character because he doesn't have 40 years of whatever. You know, but I love Diego Luna.
They do have Mon Mothma, and she's got 40 years of...
That's true. And, like, you know, no, I am excited for Andor because I'm hoping that it'll be different.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to do it for the droids you're looking for, a Star Wars podcast. What they throw.
Oh, Chris, you're back.
Anna?
Taking Joel Edgetown down to Moof Milkinville.